Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story. Welcome back to Between the Barrels. I'm your host, Madeline Green. This week I am joined by Sarah Winkleman, who just celebrated a birthday the other day. She's holding steady at 6th in the world standings and is hot on the rodeo trail right now. Take a listen. Hey Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks.
So I saw that you just had a birthday. Did you get to do anything exciting for that?
No, not especially. I'm just out here on the rodeo road and my family is all at home right now.
Oh,
so.
No.
It was kind of a quiet birthday.
You'll have that sometimes. Like you said, you are hot on the rodeo trail. So where are you right now?
Well, right now I'm just finished up at San Angelo, and now I'm just hitting some of the smaller rodeos in Texas before I head back home to take a break for a large part of May.
Just recently, I saw that you were 6th in the world standings right now. How does that feel, you know, at this point in the season and then going into the summer rodeos?
Well, it's pretty exciting.
Right.
And, you know, right now I have myself in a better position than I did last year. So, yeah, anything can happen, but at least have some more dollars won.
Yeah, and I saw that they asked you to come to Calgary. What is that feeling like?
That is so exciting. I, like I said, in my posts on Facebook, you know, I had the opportunity to go last year, and you know, last year it wasn't on my radar. I had no idea that it would even be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it did turn out last year that I got to go, I really enjoyed it there. Was hoping to make it back again this year.
You know, it's tough being on the road so much. And like you said, you know, your family's not with you right now, but there are times when your family does get to come. How does that help push you towards chasing those dreams a little bit more?
Well, it's just so much fun to have them. And you know, all three of them can be big helpers in their own way, and you know, it's exciting to feel their energy and excitement about it all.
Right.
It's helpful. Yeah,
just being out there. What would you consider your favorite rodeo?
Last year I really did think Calgary was really pretty cool.
Yeah.
This year I got to go to Houston for the first time, and then Fort Worth for the first time, and both of those rodeos, they just treat the contestants so well, and So that makes it pretty nice. Yeah.
So tell me your story and how you got started in barrel racing.
My dad and my late stepmom were both first generation horse people.
Mm-hmm.
I think they both worked really hard in their teens to eventually, you know, get a humble beginning in the horse world in their, you know, in their late teens, I think. And so I just grew up around the horses and did a lot in the way of, like, let's say, like, play day type shows, AQHA shows. And I think our families have something in common with the NBHA.
Right.
So it was at Quarter Horse Congress, and I don't really know the exact year, but in the early 90s when the NBHA was just getting started. And so then my dad and stepmom brought the NBHA back to Minnesota. My dad was the first state director for Minnesota.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
And my stepmom was the Minnesota District 1 director, which is the most populated area of Minnesota. Then that was a big part of my life for, you know, in the 90s, I'd say. And then did a little bit of high school rodeo and college rodeo for just 1 year, and then I decided against that, but just continued to grow and build on that. So my dad and stepmom had, you know, kind of a modest breeding program, But I was always around a lot of colts that way. You know, I credit kind of what I have now to just working hard through those years and getting on a whole bunch of horses.
Besides horses, you have a career in speech pathology.
Yes, not currently practicing, but I do have a master's degree in speech language pathology.
You spend so much time getting this degree. Talk about maybe what it feels like to put that aside to focus on rodeoing and more of like a dream aspect of your life.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things that certain opportunities don't come around every day. And so, you know, when those dream, the opportunity to pursue those dreams come about, you have to jump on that, which, you know, historically, I've not been much of a risk taker. And so that's really shaped my career with horses, is that because I'll just kind of, you know, hold on to a horse for too long, or, you know, also just develop such a close relationship with them that I'm not, you know, willing to move on from them.
That sounds like me.
So, you know, I've never been in a big hurry to have things go the right way with the horses, you know, and so it was always important, you know, important to have something to, like, quote, fall back on as far as a you know, stable career.
Right.
And, yeah, I really, you know, I always felt kind of called to the helping for professions. I like to help people. And so, yeah, I miss that part of my speech pathology career, as I spent, you know, a lot of my career was focused on children. I did have adults, later in my practicing years, but, you know, one thing I don't miss is all the paperwork and bureaucratic stuff involved with reporting and stuff like that. But I do miss helping all those people.
And it was good for you to have such an important career, and it allows you to now be able to kind of, you know, do some other things, I'm sure.
It's true. And it's something, too, where, you know, I had a little peace of mind when I decided to step away from it for a while, is that still an in-demand career choice. And so it's something that, you know, you can, quote, fall back on, or always can go back to. Right. But might as well pursue other opportunities while they're there.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Let's talk about competing a little bit. How do you handle the physical and mental demands of competing at this professional type level?
Well, I feel like I probably have a lot of tenacity, right? And so if I set my mind to something, I'm just not going to stop until I see what needs to be done get done. And so that means a lot of late nights and early mornings. It means, you know, not being very self-indulgent most of the time.
Yeah.
It's all about my family and my horses before myself, and, you know, that way for so many people. But I just have to put my head down and keep going.
What do you feel like are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to rodeo, and how do you feel like you overcome them?
A big challenge would be, you know, being away from home, being away from family a lot. You know, I live in Minnesota, and so it's not exactly rodeo capital of the world.
Right.
So, you know, I was talking to a fellow competitor earlier this year, and they're like, well, wait a minute. Like, you never get to be at home, at least if you live in Texas, you know, you're home all winter, right? And so, yeah, that's a challenging part of rodeo. And of course, all the miles that you have to travel, no matter where you live, I mean, you're still doing a lot of driving throughout the year. And that can just get wearing on me and also the horses. But the only other thing that I would probably, it comes to mind, would be the ground, right? We always have to talk about the ground.
Right.
So sometimes rodeo ground is less than favorable. Although, you know, so many committees across the country are working hard to be more diligent with their ground. For me, you know, my horse, he had a pretty nice futurity career, and it took him a while to adjust from the, I'm going to run wide open, no holes barred every time, to wait a minute, like, is this ground as safe as what I'm used to running on?
Let's say you're getting ready to compete at a big rodeo. Kind of take us through your process of getting ready to make that run. Do you have any routines? Do you go check out the ground? Do you see where the timers are? Kind of what do you do to get ready to make those runs?
Yeah, you're right. I do like to go up there and just lay my eyes on the arena, where the, you know, pattern set in the arena. If I can, you know, walk out into the arena on foot, even if I can't get in there on a horse, just to kind of feel what the ground feels like. Those are all things that I like to do. And then, you know, have routines that, you know, would usually include doing some PEMF treatment for my horse, that have, you know, he gets nebulized before every run. And those are kind of the staple things. And then when my kids are with me, we get all sorts of things all thrown in there at the same time, and things can get kind of hairy.
That is funny. Let's talk about your horse, Rory, some. Tell us y'all's story together.
Well, it's a story that it just has, like, you know, evolved through time, I guess, starting back to, like, when I was talking about my dad's breeding program, right? Mm-hmm. And so I ended up, I had a gelding that he had raised, and when I moved from Minnesota to Oklahoma, and I lived in Oklahoma for 11 years. Anyway, when I moved from Minnesota, he's the horse that I brought with me to Oklahoma. And a nice horse, but not a great horse. And, you know, one of those things, like, you know, conformationally, not as perfect as I would have liked, but I always kind of had to try to do less with more, I thought, you know. And so anyway, it's been just a long process in getting to this horse now. So anyway, long story short is that I took that gelding and knew that he wasn't quite what I needed and was finally ready to move on from him. And so I ended up trading him for two younger horses.
Mm-hmm.
And the second of which was a long three-year-old when I got her. She was a nice horse, but conformationally, again, not perfect. She tried real hard, but eventually I had to step off her and give her a break. Well, when I did that, I did breed her, and Rory, my current horse, is the result of that breeding. And so, you know, just a small operation, he got all of the attention when he was born. You know,
right.
He's been my best friend since day one. And so when it was time for him to get started, I was pregnant, and so I had a friend put, like, the first 60 days on him, just a nice solid start, and then I got on him and started his barrel training, and he's just kind of had that special natural feel to him all along. And, you know, so I think, you know, there's just some of that there, but, you know, then I start to think, how much of it is just what you believe about a horse, right?
And so right.
I thought he was gonna be great, and so for whatever reason, that or physical ability or whatever, the combination of all of it, he just has never disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I took him to quite a few fraternities as a five-year-old, and he did well. I mean, his biggest win as a fraternity horse was winning the Fizzbomb fraternity. And from there, the next year, I derbied him a little bit and then started introducing him to the rodeos. Yeah, I circuit rodeoed him for a couple of years, and then just was last year that I decided to go more full-time. My friend and mentor, Jane Melby, called me up one day, and she said, "Sarah, you have the horse. You need to do this thing."
Right.
And I said, "But well, okay, yeah, I believe in him, but I've got a family and a career, like, I can't do that." And so I gave it kind of all fall to marinate a little bit. And then by December, I was ready to get on board with that idea.
Yeah, I love that. When she tells you got to do something, you got to do it.
Right.
What would you say Rory's style is?
He's a turny guy. He wants to be pretty gritty about his turns. He's just an honest, pretty consistent guy.
Do you have any other horses coming up behind him?
I do have a five-year-old who is been a little bit of a slow bloomer, but I'm okay with that. He doesn't need to be anything at any certain time, and so he's along with me on the road, and we go to some jackpots when we can get there, and he's going to be nice at some point. He's just kind of physically been slow to mature and mentally a little bit the same way, but I'm excited about him whenever it's his turn.
You talked a little bit about Jane Melby being an influence. Who have been some other influences in the industry that you look up to or you've gone to for advice?
Well, there's just really, you know, so many people. I would say, you know, I'm more of a silent observer type. I'm a, you know, I'll overanalyze everything to death. And so, you know, maybe there's not certain, you know, a lot of people I want to call out, but just studying through time and then taking, you know, I think too, you know, I would give anybody advice to learn from as many people as you can and then take it home and see how it fits your style and adapts into your program.
Along with that, what advice would you give someone who was maybe wanting to start rodeoing?
I, you know, would say if you have somebody who is, you know, can be a good mentor for you, don't be afraid to ask them all the questions, including the silly ones. I'm happy to help, you know, anybody who's just getting started. I have some friends who are coming to me for advice. And, you know, I've just kind of figured things out mostly the hard way. I'll study something to death. And usually I can, you know, you can find the answers to everything you're looking for if you just put the effort into it. So
looking back on last year, what do you feel like was your greatest accomplishment?
You know, I think I ended up 16th in the world last year.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's still considered a big accomplishment. I'm really excited to be 16th, even though it's one place short of the end goal.
that's kind of bittersweet.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I just got to see so many cool places last year, came out of it with a, you know, a greater appreciation for it all and, you know, definitely more knowledge of where I should and shouldn't be going.
And then thinking about your career in barrel racing as a whole, what do you consider your greatest accomplishment?
These are tough questions. I mean, winning Fort Worth this year was a big accomplishment. One of those things that still, you know, it's like, wow, that really did happen. And but I mean, all of it, just every single time we can go out and have a good run, I'm feeling accomplished about that. It's there's so much wonderful competition that when you put things together and everything goes right, that's something to be proud of every time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm proud of my horse. I'm thankful and proud of my family for sticking with me through it all. I'm excited about the people that I get to meet and help and also help along the way. So
lastly, to just wrap it all up, what do you still kind of hope to achieve and what impact do you hope to have on the sport?
Well, I would sure like to be within the top 15 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to keep plugging away towards that goal. And, you know, I like to give back and like to help others. I'm always eager to answer any questions anybody has come to me with. And so that's, you know, something that I see more of in my future is reaching out to help others. And it's like, as far as what I'm used to doing as a career, helping people with their speech and language skills. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I can continue to help people in the barrel racing industry, that would be excellent as well.
Well, that is all for this week's episode of Between the Barrels. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. You can stay up to date with everything going on all of our social media platforms. Or if you have a question or suggestion or someone you want to hear on the show, email me at betweenthebarrels@gmail.com. I'm your host, Madeline Green. Tune in next week.